Now, people who were at this early stage, which I refer to as denial, it's a bit hard to see that, but are in a state of isolation or separation from cultural difference. And their experience of the world is almost entirely like that. That the things which seem to be, again, you don't have these graphics. You have the text on that six-page handout that describes each of these stages at much greater length. The idea of this denial here is that we are not able to perceive anything outside of our own and our immediate familiar experience. We're not able to perceive it. An alcoholic in denial, for instance, is not able to perceive that he or she is drinking. That's the psychological definition of denial, is the inability to perceive something. And so I use the term denial here to mean the inability to perceive cultural difference. People at denial, people whose predominant orientation to cultural difference is denial, as I'll speak of it, if their predominant orientation is denial, they are unable to recognize that other people are having experiences that are different than their own. They may have a vague idea that there's something out there, foreigners, immigrants, those people over there. There's some idea of it, but that idea is not well developed. The ability to think in specific terms about another culture is simply not available to people at denial. Now, possibly it's because they're in isolation or separation from others, and therefore they don't have a lot of need to experience cultural difference. That could be, just like our gentleman,
Brown.
That's your name, Brown? Oh, okay. Brown?
Brown is the color.
Brown, the color brown, okay. Mr. Brown here is in this condition about chocolate. He is in denial about chocolate. And what that means is he is unable to make the perceptual discriminations that would allow him to sort of give reality to the chocolate experience, as opposed to Ms. Eva, who is indeed not in denial about chocolate because she is able to bring discriminations and make distinctions and therefore to have an experience of it. Well, you really can't. And the reason you can't have an experience of chocolate is because you have no distinctions that you can bring to bear to say this is different than that. Therefore, you just can't have much of an experience of it. Now, the way that this works in culture is, again, if this is the cultural worldview that we have, these are all the ways that things can be in the world, and what your primary culture gives you is a set of constructs, and these constructs tell you how to organize things. They say, make a distinction between chocolate and something else. Or don't distinguish between two kinds of chocolate, but do distinguish about three kinds of beer. Distinguish between high-status people and low-status people, or don't distinguish between high-status people and low-status people. This is all of these constructs are given in your primary socialization, and we all carry this kind of set of constructs around. Everybody in this sense is equally sophisticated. We, all of us, if you are operating successfully, if you're sitting in this room, you have a complex set of constructs that allow you to organize your experience in the world in a very sophisticated way. The question is, do you have an equally complex set of constructs for dealing with other cultures? And there we become different. That people in this earlier stage of denial are more likely to have a very vague and undeveloped sort of category, chocolate, right? Or foreigner. They have a broad category of foreigner and they lump everybody together and say they're foreigners. Or they may have a general category of Asian, for instance, and they say, okay, well, they're all Asians. You know. I think some of you have read, did some of you read the article that I wrote in which I gave the example of the parade in Portland, Oregon, where it was the Japanese, where the sister city of Sapporo in Japan. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Okay, I'll tell you the story. That in Oregon we have, you know these parades, you know what a float is? And a parade, it's a motorized vehicle with a bunch of flowers and things on it, and goes down this, you know, parade, and you know, there are generally people waving off of it and throwing candy, and you know, and people standing on the street and watching it go by. Okay, parade. Anyway, Portland has one of these parades called the Rose Parade. And in one of these floats was created to speak to address the sister city of Portland, Oregon, which is Sapporo in northern Japan. So the Japanese dignitaries were invited to come to watch the float go by. And on the float were the women who were waving off. And the Japanese dignitaries, with one of my students, were speaking to one of them. They turned to my student and they said, "Why are there Chinese women on that float?" And sure enough, about half the women were Japanese, but half of them were Chinese. You know? And the Japanese guys, well, they could tell, you know, who the Chinese women were and who the Japanese women were. And so my student went to the director of the parade, and she said, "Well," and he said, the student asked her, "Why were there Chinese women on the Japanese float?" And she said, "Chinese, Japanese, close enough." Yeah, so she was failing to make a distinction here between two kinds of people that, in fact, was important to be making in that situation. You know, it would have been useful for her to be making that distinction, and she wasn't. But that's because she had an undifferentiated category. She was not able to make a distinction between two different kinds of Asians in this case, lump them together and said, "Well, you know, they're all Asians, you know, that's close enough," when of course it wasn't. In the same way that you might lump all Africans together and say, "Close enough, they're Africans," you know, when in fact there are dramatic differences, as we all know, between Eastern, Western Africans, Northern, Southern Africans, and certainly by tribal and national group. Likewise, lumping all Nordic countries together, all Europeans together, all Americans together, for that matter, runs the same danger of missing important differences that make a difference to the people who are closer to the event. So one characteristic of denial is the tendency to lump things together. The other characteristic of denial is the tendency to ask stupid questions. And I call it, cleverly, the stupid question syndrome. The way this works is that what I found is that when people do differentiate the category, they tend to differentiate it in four ways. And I'm not sure why, actually, but it's just been my observation that people come up with four things. And I first discovered this when I asked a bunch of U.S. high school students what they knew about Africa, the continent of Africa, okay? And they said four things, almost without exception. There's a few differences, but typically they gave me four things. Okay, and I'm gonna tell you what one of them is. They said that black people live there, okay? Even though white people live there as well, but they said that. Okay, what else did they say? Poverty. Sure, why do you suppose they said poverty? Yeah, that's right. That when you look at in the Western press at images from Africa, seldom do you see pictures of people coming out of townhouses in Nairobi or anything. You know, you see pictures of people in camps and other things. So there's a lot of poverty, and that's what they said. And what else did they say?
Disease.
Went along with the poverty. Okay.
Animals and wildlife.
That's right. Rawr! Animals, wild animals. That's right. Wild animals. And then if you have wild animals, you have? Jungle. Now, never mind that those of you who live around know that the wild animals don't live in the jungle, okay? Never mind that. They live on the plains, but the image is that somehow the wild animals are in the jungle. Okay. So now, here we have the setup for the stupid question syndrome, right? Because here's this high school student who's walking down the path or walking down the hallway in her school, and here is the African exchange student, a black African exchange student, and she wants to have a conversation with this person. And so she does what Americans, U.S. Americans do, which is, you know, she wants to ask a question. That's how they start conversations, they ask a question. So she reaches back into her Africa category to ask this question. observing that this is a black person in front of her, she's unlikely to say, "Are you black?" So 1/4 of the possible questions have now been eliminated. And so she says, "When you get up from your hut in the morning and go outside, do any wild animals come out of the jungle?" So subsequently, I did a study with a lot of African students at the University of Minnesota, and I asked them, "What's the question you've been most often asked by Americans?" And they said, "People are always asking us about wild animals, you know, and people are saying, 'Oh, we've never seen a wild animal, you know,' but, you know," and this one guy said he had a scar on his arm, and he said, "Yeah, you know, when they ask me now, I say, 'Yeah, the last one bit me, you know, right here,' and he, you know, shows the scar, and says, 'Look, right there,' you know, and people go, 'Oh, wow,' you know, and they just get so tired of that. This is the stupid question syndrome, you know, this is the, and it's not meant from people at denial, it's not meant to be a denigration or a put down or, you know, anything bad about people. It's simply a kind of, you could say ignorance, but that misses the idea that it's an undifferentiated category. It's that people are not, you know, much as Brown here might ask stupid questions about chocolate. You know, it's like, is this a good chocolate or not? You know, when anybody would know, anybody who had any experience of chocolate would know that it was a piece of trash, you know. He'd say, "Well, I don't know, seems fine to me, you know." And he'd seem kind of stupid. Well, it's not that he's stupid, it's that he's failing to make distinctions in that category. And similarly, people who ask these kind of stupid questions are failing to make distinctions.
Can I just comment on that?
Sure.
My wife is good with chocolate. So I was in China, and I decided to buy chocolate, Chinese chocolate. Of course, no clue what to buy. And at the airport in Shanghai, I'm asking the lady, which one is the best Chinese chocolate out of all these? And she gave me a box, which I paid. And when I brought it here, my wife was like smiling because she thought it was so bad. But she had to be nice, so she doesn't hurt my feelings. So just said, sharing.
Yeah, so that's right. She says, "Well, you know, he's stupid, but he's sweet, right?" Yeah. Make up for it, okay.
Last semester, we did a program in multicultural counseling. Mm. So we're supposed to present 10 papers. And I was in the UK, I decided to undertake a little field work to support my 10 paper. I happened to speak to PhD students and part-time lecturers at the Lincoln University. And incidentally, I spoke to about 10 of them, and nobody has ever heard of multicultural counseling. I was talking of introducing it to managers. Yeah. And these were potential managers in the making. There were computer science, there were human resources, PhDs, you know, so I kind of...
Yeah. and thank you for saying it, because those of us who are involved in this area think, well, everybody, you know, must be thinking about cultural difference and multiculturalism. But the fact is that very sophisticated people who are sophisticated in their particular worlds are not necessarily sophisticated in the world of culture or cultural difference. Yeah. So you've discovered that from your personal observation. Yeah, it's true. All right. So anyway, that's the basic idea of denial. When you think of the individuals, and again, you have this on your handout, when you think of the implications for individuals here, typically it's the inability to perceive or construe data from different cultural contexts. I'm not able to understand what's going on outside of my own context. Then I may have a kind of aggressive ignorance. What that means is that people who say, "I don't know, and I don't need to know." And probably the people that you were just speaking to were people who not only said, "I don't know what you're talking about," but when you pushed it, they'd say, "Oh, I don't need to know that. You know, I need to know about computers, or I need to know about business. I need to know about finance. I don't need to know about this multicultural stuff." So there's a kind of aggressiveness about the ignorance. The feeling or the affect that goes along with this tends to be a benign attitude towards others. That means people say, well, I don't have anything against you on the surface. However, under the surface, there may be some tendency to dehumanize others. That is, because I cannot think of you in as complex ways as I think of myself, I therefore may subtly dehumanize you. I see you as being like an element of the environment, something that doesn't have the same complexity as I, as a complicated human being, have. As a result, I have a tendency then to not only be seeking familiar patterns, but if I am in a position of power, I may exercise that power through exploitation. I may be willing to say to you, it's okay for you to work for much lower wages than me. It's okay for you to be in more dangerous conditions than I am. It's okay for you to live in a more poor situation than I do because you don't care about that as much as I do. That's an indication of denial. And of course, the ultimate denial in this case would be slavery, you know, which is, you know, that somehow you are so less human than I am that it's okay for you to be, to be enslaved to me. This is no longer, of course, recognized as an appropriate thing, but as you all know, it still occurs in one form or another. There's still a lot of slavery in the world. The implications for organizations, which you also have on your handout, are a little bit similar. That is, we don't know about culture, and we don't need to know as an organization. But the organization also may be blindsided, and what that means is that there may be the organization may be sued, let's say, for sexism or racism or some other kind of discrimination, and they don't know where it came from. They say, well, you know, why in the world is this happening? In societies in which, where there's a lot of denial, when suddenly a group in the society rises up and says, hey, you're not treating us right, and perhaps violently expresses their protest, other people in the society are kind of going, where did this come from? That sort of ignorance of, wow, how did that happen, is an example, probably, of denial, although we may see minimization as well here. Typically, diversity is not seen as a resource. That is, it's not seen as anything of particular value, and as a result, there's not much of a climate of respect for diversity. So that's pretty much the denial piece.